Hey everybody, I'm Lord Corey.
And I'm Lady Kirby.
Stay tuned after this episode of Putting On Airs for a sneak peek at Season 2 of Little House of the Dragon.
Team Black, baby.
Team Black. What's up, Airheads? How you doing? Welcome back. It's time. Once again, we're in the virtual Airstream studios. If things look a little different this week, it's because we're using a different piece of technology because we've been having our technical difficulties lately. But so hopefully it's seamless and enjoyable for you there.
It's been giving me fits, Trey.
Hey, I know it has. I know that's right. Listen, I wanted to do something up top because I saw this video on the internet. And I, you know, I'm a man of my word. I'm a man of integrity. this video is frankly devastating to my case, but I'm still going to show it.
Please do.
Because, like I said, I'm a man of honor. This is not a squirrel, but it's very much akin to a squirrel, and it's a scenario that has literally been laid out multiple times on this show by both you and Airheads alike, but we get to see it in real life, okay? So, and also, this is not my video, so, like, the commentary, obviously, don't hold that against us. That's all I'm going to say. And also, minor trigger warning, this involves a small perished animal. But again, it's very relevant to the show. So here it goes.
Homie done passed away and he ain't leaving his side. Hey, homie, I know it probably hurts, bro. We got to get out the road, G. Get out the road. I know. Damn, homie. Bro, I'm sorry, bro. I just know I didn't do it, G. And I'm sorry. I mean, fuck, bro. Damn, you ain't leaving your homie side?
How sad.
Oh, man, that's sad.
Look how sad.
Fuck, that's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what are you doing? You humping that nigga? God damn, you a savage.
Psych. Gotcha, motherfucker. They don't give a fuck. They don't love nothing. Nothing more than defiling their friends' fresh corpses by sodomizing them. Yeah, if you're only listening, that was a dead rabbit in the road and his little rabbit buddy sitting there beside its corpse looking sad and refusing to leave its side. And the guy making the video is doing this commentary, and he obviously thinks the same way, and his heart is touched by it. He's like, oh, it's so sad. But you're in danger here in the road. So he moves them out of the road. And then when they get moved out of the side of the road, the one that's still alive eventually starts humping the dead one's corpse. Right before the video. So I'd like to enter that into evidence.
Okay. But, yeah. That's cool. Trey, you didn't know this, but I have a little surprise for you. I've put together a piece here, and I call this Trey Got Some Splaining to Do. Let's check this out.
And this is sad too. Maybe this is further to y'all's point, but like,
turtle.
Their owners die, and these birds are fucking distraught because they love their fucking Karen.
And this is your argument to keep.
Oh, they do, Trey?
Yeah, Corey.
We'll get
before
into
you do whatever you're gonna do with him.
Yeah, we can't divert into that.
So Trey, explain.
Look.
I don't know how to explain it zoologically because obviously birds cannot have that big of a brain, right? But there's birds are not like rodents. Maybe not all rodents are created equal, but not all birds are created equal. But like, dude, crows are smart as fuck. Crows remember people. Like there's like instances or evidence of crows like holding a grudge against a person. And stuff like that. And parrots can talk. And I know they don't like.
They mimic.
It's mimic, but still.
But still, that has to take a higher level of something. I agree.
You've seen the fucking trained parrots and the wild ass shit that they get them to do. Like they run them through these little like quizzes and
you're
stuff.
You're not having to convince me, by the way, that parrots
are capable of love. That's what I'm saying. Parrots never came up before. But I never said that none of them could. I always said there was some that could. I did say
Young Jamie, pull up the clip. Hold on. We just have the audio. I can play it right here. Just the audio of what you said. This is Trey Crowder 3 years ago.
Dude, every goddamn animal on earth, every single one of them is a soulless
fucking succubus that deserves to fucking die and shouldn't share the oxygen that we breathe.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, that's not what I said. I know for a fact I said animals and elephants and primates, and also I said your dog. I would never say your dog couldn't love you because I don't want to be canceled forever. I didn't. Look, go back and breathe. I'm more ashamed of the fact that I'm wearing the same shirt today in that clip from yesterday. It's always, why do I always have the same goddamn shirt
on? Trash.
I know. I even thought about not putting this shirt back on this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no one's going to put it together that was yesterday and this is today or whatever. And then of course, you've got a clip.
To defend
from yesterday.
You. To defend you, wear the same clothes all the time, just not when we record. My nightshirt stay the same, and then my nightshirt becomes my morning shirt, and the only time I'm changing out of it is if I go walk in it and sweat, and it goes right back. I don't put it in the laundry. It goes on the edge of the bed, so I know this what I'm wearing tomorrow. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I do that all the time. If I don't sweat in something, change it. I mean, after a few days or whatever, I will. But yeah, I haven't gone to the grocery. That's not true. I went to record our podcast yesterday. I don't know. It's just like Katie's a little behind in the laundry. I was trying to take.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, that's all it was. I thought I'd ease up on that. Trying to conserve water, you know. Anyway, we never, as I recall, ever talked about birds specifically.
We didn't.
So if you had brought birds up, I might have been like, fuck no, birds can't love. And then you'd really have me in a corner right here. But I don't think that ever happened. And I never claimed that all animals were incapable of love. I mean, like Andrew Jackson's bird, you know, loved him, I believe.
Sure did. Yeah.
So he was so distraught at Andrew Jackson's funeral, he had to be removed from cursing.
Cursing
somebody. Said he couldn't stop cursing, but
it was the N word.
It would be like if he was like, he's like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean?
God damn, no. No, fuck.
Like a bird doing that.
Fuck no.
That's funny.
Fuck, that's funny. I need that. This is why there's a myriad of reasons, I should say, that I want us to hit harder.
Yeah, me too.
Like, you know, obviously monetary wise, which by the way, everybody listening to this, if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube, go ahead to watchpoa.com. That does help. There's monetary reasons. There is, I genuinely feel joy entertaining people, and if we got bigger, we would be entertaining more people, and thus that would maximize my happiness. But one of the things I really, when I think about, oh, god damn it, I wish we hit harder, is that like if we did, I could have that cartoon made within 3 days of Andrew Jackson's bird, you know, fucking crying at his funeral. Like we could have a dude on staff that's like, hey, turn this into that, and it would happen. But we don't hit. We do hit, but we don't fucking hit.
Yeah, having those minions like that would hit. That's a major upside of hitting, is you got all these various minions that do that type of stuff for you.
Like it's just me here, and I'm stupid.
I know. No, tell me about it. I'm stupider than you are when it comes to that type of shit. And it's also just me. I had something I was gonna say.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I can't. God damn it. What were it? It was something about you.
Me not hitting.
No, I was just going to say, for people that are part of the extended universe, like another thing that happened on that well-read podcast recording yesterday was like that whole thing with the dog and the puppet that I did at the end. Like,
I loved it.
That did not go the way I thought it was going to go.
it was like for me.
That was like a moment of like reflection for me, like genuinely, for where I was like, damn, man, maybe I am fucked up.
I knew they were going to react that way for the rest.
I didn't at all. Yeah. I thought everyone was going to be like, yeah, bro, we're with you. That's ridiculous. But so for people that don't listen to Well Read, I saw another clip on Instagram of this guy training his dog by like disciplining a dog puppet, like a puppet with a human hand inside of it. Not a real animal. He like slapped this dog puppet that's on his buddy's arm and in front of his real dog to show the dog what not to do, but he never touched the real dog.
Right.
And people in the comments were like, this is fucked up. This is cruel and unusual. And I was reading through the comments like, what the fuck? What? No, it ain't. Like,
yeah,
this is this. How? What the hell's wrong with these people? Also, by the way, if you get on Instagram, the comments routinely say the N-word and rip on disabled people. And I'll right. find the shit all the time. But then this is where they draw the line.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I told that story on Well Read yesterday. And Drew and our guest, Daniel Van Kirk, who I love, were both like fully on the team of the Instagram commenters. They were like, that is fucked up. That's supremely fucked up. And I was just like, what? I did not see that coming. Because I genuinely don't see how that's, and they were like, that's mentally scarring for the dog. It's traumatic for the dog. And I'm like, but he's not, it's not a real thing being hurt.
Right.
And the dog is never getting hit or hurt or anything like that either. Like, what?
Buddy, I don't know.
I'm from a town where people just whip the shit out of dogs.
Hunt them.
Yeah, right, exactly. Hunt. So, like, I guess I just can't. I kind of have a whole bit about this right now, and I even say in it, I'm like, look, you can't listen to me. I'm from fucking Salina, Tennessee in the 90s. Dogs did not hit back then the way they hit for people now.
No, they didn't.
But anyway.
You are like a victim. I got three things to say real quick. You are a victim of your time in that like, you know that Bill Burr bit about like people that like, you know, society was one way, and then they had kids, and for 18 years, they were just... You know, all they were focused on was their kid, and they didn't see society shift. So then 18 years later, they finally come out and they say something that would have been totally fine when they were first in. Well, that's kind of you with dogs. Like the way, if we were telling that same fucking story in the 90s, most people would be like, oh, hell. And there'd be plenty of people in the comments like, I beat my fucking
dog. Yeah, I'm about to say, the people back then would have been like, what kind of pussy shit is that? Beat the goddamn dog. Yeah, right.
What's this goddamn CIA fucking debriefing bullshit you're doing? But the second thing I wanted to say that I didn't get to say yesterday, and only because it's very difficult when there's three of y'all in person and me playing Zoran, was that the reason that I'm like in the middle where like I go, okay, it is fucked up a little bit, but I don't think to the point where someone doing it or be reprimanded. Like, I get what they're saying, but the reason it didn't bother me at all is because the clip that I saw originally, that's the same as that clip, but that I think this clip, either this clip copied or the clip that I saw was copying this, it was a dude doing it to his baby. like his baby... He was trying to teach his baby to do something, and he was like trying to get the baby to eat, right? And he puts a spoon, and the baby's like, So then he puts the spoon up to like a plush Mickey Mouse, and the Mickey Mouse refuses it. And this dude tees off and beats the fuck out of this Mickey Mouse. And then afterwards, he shows the kid, and the kid's like, you know, fucking taking it. Yeah. And this dude was getting crucified. And I was like, it should be. That's fucked up. So because it wasn't a kid, I was like, whatever, who gives a fuck?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it just feels like a step up to me, but I guess we passed that step 15 years or 20 years ago, and I just didn't know that, or I was unaware of that. Like, I literally see stuff like that, and I'm like, well, that's a nice alternative, you know? And like,
good enough.
Dog lovers and stuff see that, and they're like, this is horrific. So,
I don't know what's
wrong with me.
I would never do it. But to me, it's like whatever does keep you from actually physically beating your dog, continue to do that, I think, you know. Right. I don't know, man. This is going to me be backtracking, but like, I don't know if the dog's going to be psychologically scarred from a pretend puppet thing. Like, we might be giving the dog a little bit too much credit.
Well, that's what I was trying to say yesterday, too, but Daniel and Drew both made some good points. They were like, Trey, what's the whole point of doing it?
Right. If it doesn't stick
with the dog, like clearly it sticks with the dog because he stopped the behavior. And if he didn't, then why would you do it in the first place? And I was like, I don't have a good answer for that. I guess you're right. But
they were right, but still queer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go.
Dude, that happens a lot
these days. Yeah. But yeah, that's like the order of the day as far as I'm concerned. Right, but still queer. I mean, that's my whole
That's point. Your album.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So, what order you want to do this in? You want me to keep talking or you
want to... Yeah, you go ahead if you want to. Go ahead. That's whatever. You know, we got some exciting show today, guys. I'm very pumped about this one. And I don't know what Trey's talking about. So this is... You're sort of surprising me, Professor Cho style.
Well, I don't know how much this is going to hit. I hope it hits. There's at least some interesting stuff. And I had the idea, me and Kate are going through the process of trying to buy a house, and it's just a Byzantine nightmare, all the various forms and signatures and initials and it's just so much shit. And
don't hit.
Just logistically, it just don't hit. It's just like, God damn, does it have to be this complicated? And I guess it does, but
right. It's not even the money. Like, the money is obviously, it sucks to spend money on a thing, but like, if you got the money, it still don't hit to have to do.
Exactly. So that got me, like you said, it's the money. It's also, I'm in Burbank, California, so it's a lot of fucking money. So, and I've been thinking about that, and also watching at the same time, I've been watching this Rome show on HBO, which I think I'd mentioned I was doing before. And, you know, they're on there throwing gold coins at each other. You remember that old Louis bit about, like...
Here's a sack of coins of an indeterminate value.
Just an indeterminate amount of coins that...
Hit me things.
Yeah, that should cover it, right? You just throw a sack of coins at an innkeep or whatever. Like, it was sort of like that in Rome. And the two things combined, I mean, think it's like... Because I've said before, I'm very money dumb, you know?
Me too.
And I would say it's like, I'm so money dumb, like, I kind of don't even really know, like... What is money? You know what I mean? Like, really?
Question.
Right? So I thought I would just, like, Google that, right? And I started reading about the history of money, and then I was like, well, you know, nothing's fancier than money. I could talk about the history of money on the show.
Yeah.
But then I got into it and very quickly realized, it was like, I don't want to read this much. Well, it's like, this could literally be an entire college course, like a semester long thing, you know, like books and books have been written about this subject. Aristotle and Plato and stuff, you know, wrote treatises on the matter. Like, this is like a whole discipline of anthropological science.
Well,
the history of money.
To make you feel better, and to be fair, many of the subject I've covered have been entire courses, but what you do is...
I'm going to get a third grade representation.
There you go. And be wrong. Yeah.
Yes.
Don't be afraid to be wrong.
So, first of all, money predates written human history, so there is no real...
Right.
Any kind of theory about how money started is all just... conjecture, speculation, because money was around before we started having history, which there's actually, that's a directly related cause and effect thing, which we'll get to a little later. But I do know that, like, early on there was, you know, bartering, obviously. And, you know, bartering was like, I got three cows and I need, you know, four goats and a shovel. Right.
That's a bad trade, by the way. I'm not taking that.
Exactly. Well, and that was the problem. Yeah. It's like, you might want goats, so you go to the goat man. It's called the coincidence of wants.
Right.
Bartering relied on that. You go to the goat man. The goat man's like, I don't want sheep. And you're like, well, I got sheep. And he's like, well, you can't have no goats then.
Right.
And he was like, well, now I'm fucked. I got to find somebody
that wants sheep.
That both wants sheep and has goats.
Right.
Or do some kind of work, some kind of NBA four-team trade situation where it's like, Ur's goats go to Ugg's sheep, and in exchange for, you know, Shabbat's fucking grain or whatever. You know what I mean?
Like, old Shabbat the grain man.
You had to work all that out, and it was a pain in the ass, right?
So it was like, just living back then.
That's true.
Do that.
Yeah, nothing hit. So people thought, the assumption by a lot of people for a long time was like, that is where money came from.
Right.
People being like, this don't hit.
Right.
Fuck, we need some other way to do all this. Right. But apparently people now think that it never came from bartering, because there's no concrete evidence that there was ever a society whose economy was based entirely on bartering.
But it had to be.
Well, apparently what it was it was more of a gift based economy, and meaning like,
commies?
all the way back to like hunter-gatherer times. So like prehistory tribes and then on up through like near the beginning of civilization in the Bronze Age and stuff, they would like share everything that they had with everybody else in the general vicinity. The hope being that like, okay, I had a good hunt today. I brought three deers back.
Right.
But I'm going to share it with everybody because if I don't get shit tomorrow,
right,
then hopefully will have some deers and I can still have those. And it was like altruistic, but also, logical. Like it makes sense.
And maybe there's a guy who can't hunt, but he's really good at making spears. And so like he's like, okay, guys, thank you for doing that. I will provide you with the spears because my leg don't hit. And he really didn't want to get thrown off of a cliff. So he learned.
Exactly. So that's how that used to be, right, for a long time. But then, you know, as we got, then agriculture became a thing and livestock, right? And that's when all this, I know I already used sheep as an example, but that's when it became like more complicated because like people would have grain, but no sheep. Or also an important part of it was like this dude would have land and he was going to plant and grow a bunch of grain, but like that takes a while, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, season. I got all these seed. Eventually I'll have 500 grain, which is pretty good. But right now I got nothing. But in order to get that 500 grain, I need a hoe and an ass or whatever, you know?
Me too, brother.
I heard that. Hoe with an ass. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
call them a
classic hoe ass combo. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how debt came to be a thing was that credit. Dynamic. You know what I mean? Debt and credit. Like the guy, he would get tools and be like, I will give you grain later when I have it, but for now, you got to give me this for nothing. Right. And that was sort of the beginnings of debt and credit and whatnot. And then later, as cities became a thing, they're like the temple was in control of all this naturally. So back then, it was all.
Yeah.
It was always the temple. It was always the priest. It was always the churches.
And they wore the jewels on their fucking shit. Probably break a little bit of that off and throw it to the goat man.
Yeah, right. So you'd take your grain to the temple. The earliest form of like representative money where it's like, you know, like a dollar bill is representative money. It's not real. It's nothing. Yeah, right. So the first example of that was like at these temples, they'd bring grain in there and they would the temple man, the priest or monks or just the temple dudes, right, would give a clay tablet with however many notches on it to represent the amount of, and he was like, there you go. This proves that you have this much grain in the temple. And then that farmer could take that clay tablet if he wanted to
and get a free sub.
He could give that to somebody else, right? Yeah. It was like an early form. He's like, look, now you got all this grain in the temple. If you'll give me those donkeys, right? Or whatever.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
And so that was like an early version of it. And then
How quick was counterfeit, you think? Like the day after?
Right. Yes. Well, that's so there's another thing later called we'll get something called tally sticks in a little bit.
Okay.
That had an answer for that. This, I don't know. Maybe people was just too dumb back. This was all too new and people's too dumb. It's like, y'all heard about this money stuff and no one had thought yet to fuck with it. Although that seems like whoring or prostitution. Like that's one of the very first, like as soon as money got invented.
Oh yeah.
Fraud was the second thing that
got invented,
I would imagine. Yeah. But anyway, various towns popped up with temples and their own economies and things like that. But it's like this place was good at growing grain, but this other place was good at growing fucking poppies or whatever. And so they wanted that. So that, you know, they would trade with each other. But like, how much grain is so many poppies worth and yada, yada, whatever. And they realized, like, we need something that hits for them and for us, like a proxy for all this shit. And the natural thing was for, you know, precious metals, right? Yeah. Generally gold and silver seemed to hit for everybody.
Off the jump. So
pretty much, I mean, metals were some, I mean, before metal or aside from metals in some places, way, way back, some of the earliest forms of like representative money. And I found this odd and I've never heard it before. In ancient China, ancient Africa, and ancient India, all separately and independently, they used cowrie shells. You ever heard of cowrie shells?
Cow, like C-A-W-R-Y, cowrie?
C-O-W-R-Y.
Cowrie. Yeah.
No. It's a large sea snail and their shells are pretty, I guess. So these various ancient civilizations all agreed independently of each other, like, those shells hit. And because they all thought they hit, they used shells for money. But generally, people use metals because metal was, like, durable.
Yeah.
Consistent.
More rare.
Divisible. Rare. Sought after. Useful in and of itself. It had its own intrinsic value. Yada, yada. So that's how silver and gold became, like, the proxy currency. That's how currency became a thing. But also, like I referenced earlier, so they got all these temples, all this stuff is happening. It's like, they're okay, this gold equals this many grain, and they agree with that too down the river in fucking Tigrisville or whatever. And, you know, here in Hamaslabat, we fucking, you know, we got more. What's the word for, what kind of grains are there? I keep just saying grain.
Well, there's wheat.
Yeah, like, but like old grain.
Oh, mead. No, mead was what you made out of the
barley.
Barley.
They had a shitload of barley back then. But anyway, and they, you know, at some point along the way, this was almost all this I'm talking about was in Mesopotamia, by the way, you know, Iraq and them. By the way, I know this has been pointed out a million times, but it's wild how.
I know.
Iraq, that whole region over there was like the literal cradle of civilization. Like this where we all came from. They figured it all out before anybody did, and we're way ahead of everybody. And now they don't hit, you know.
Dude.
in my opinion, because of the lord
it's not your opinion, fact. Fact that people refuse to believe. No, I hear you. And also, like, man, what a fucking great name. Like, I feel like Mesopotamia, if you like, I learned, like, the first time I heard the word Mesopotamia, I was then told what it was. A lot of Bible stuff, too, because, you know, it takes place around that area. But it was like Mesopotamia was, like, synonymous with, like, it was glorious. It was, you know, like, everything was palatial and, like, it was awesome. And that was the most modern whatever. And I feel like Mesopotamia is such a great fucking name for that, that if I didn't know that and someone said, I'm going to tell you a place's name and you have to tell me whether it hits or not, and you said Mesopotamia, I'd be like, that hits, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, so this is all happening in Mesopotamia, and they had all this going on. It's like barley, and this much barley is worth this much silver, and they want it down there, and we got gold and all this stuff, too. And it's like at some point, they realize, like, they're like, man, we need a way to know this later.
Yeah.
You know? Like, is this too much to know right now?
Yeah.
If we could, like, put this somewhere else and keep it there and then come back to it later and put it back in our brain and know it again, you know, that would hit.
because this is way too complicated for us to just keep knowing all the time. You know, we need a way to know it later in case we stop knowing it now. And that's how writing came to be. That's how, like, money, agriculture leading to economics and money led directly to writing, which led to history and everything else and everything we know about, you know, humanity since then. So, like, you know, it's always been money.
I was about to say,
the very beginning,
the mother of invention, they say, is necessity, but also there's plenty of stuff that we don't need that gets invented, and it's purely profit driven. Like, it's all, you know, money is the great motivator for fucking so many things.
Yeah, so the coin in use in Mesopotamia back in this time in ancient Babylon. Babylon, another real hitting name.
Yep.
It's so hard. Doesn't, you know, it's like, it just, I don't know. It don't seem to fit with, you know, like
what it
is. Baghdad be. Yeah,
right. Yeah, but it used to hit.
By all accounts, used to hit. But anyway, the currency of record back then was the shekel. One of the first. Nice. You heard about the shekels.
Yeah, shekels.
Which were primarily made of silver, but they were some of the first coinage in the ancient world. Also, you know, you've heard of the Code of Hammurabi. Which is the oldest and best preserved code of ancient law that we have. A lot of those laws had to do with money, like laws about interest. Like, people came up with interest already back then, and like fines.
Where were they from?
Breaking something laws.
They come up with interest?
it's in the Bible, right?
Yeah, no, it is.
Can't have, like, interest is a old ass concept, I suppose.
The banks had to figure out how to make money, you know, and because I'd say
at this point in time, they don't really have bank. They have, there's money lenders and merchants and stuff like that, but they don't have like
banks. A physical bank. The banks then were sort of like how corporations are. It's like, they're just kind of all up in the air. They exist in our mind. Like, this dude, you owe him so many debts. He owns your this. So he's sort of your bank, I guess.
Yeah. So when Greece became hot shit, you know, Athenian Greece, when they took over which, by the way, we should talk about at another time, because that it fascinates the hell out of me, too, that they had a fucking direct democracy that long ago. Like, you know, people back then, they like you were all thousands of years ago in ancient Greece, you were like forced to participate in your government. It wasn't like you didn't run for office.
Right.
You got like picked. And you had to do it. And people were like, I don't want to do that. But you had no choice. You had to do it. People had to like participate in government. And I know in like Australia, they got compulsory voting and stuff. I just think it's wild that long ago. Now, they had slaves and they didn't let their slaves do shit. But like, I just think it's wild that long ago that every type of person except for slaves was like running shit. And I know that's like, you know, that's the whole thing with ancient Greece.
Of course. They
invented democracy and all that. But
I'm going to stop you there and then let you go on. Democracy was invented in 1776, famously. But continue with your little tome.
Jesus advised the first Americans on how to overthrow the yoke of tyranny. Yes.
It is crazy. And I mean, like, I know that like Greece ended up not working out. But I don't think that was 100% why, you know, like,
right. So part of how Greece came to hit so hard was they found this huge silver mine in one of their, colonies or cities or whatever, city states. And, then silver was, you know, hot shit at the time. And they had all these coins made out of silver, and they had like an unlimited supply of silver. And that's one of the ways they started to hit. Later, they got taken over by Rome, you know, and then Rome, they sort of became Rome. I mean, they did become Rome. And then during the Roman Empire, when they were hitting real hard, they kept all of their money in a temple in Rome. And that temple was the temple to the goddess Moneta, M-O-N-E-T-A, Moneta. That's where Rome kept all their money, the Temple of Moneta, which is how it came to be called money. Money comes from Moneta, which the word money does. But anyway, so yeah, they would also, the coins hit because they were considered, they had intrinsic value. Gold hits for people. So a gold coin like hits, there's no
shit trading.
Like fucking crypto, you know what I mean? Like, it was the opposite of that. It meant something, but they would, cool. What they would do is they would debase money back then. They'd like, you know, it looked gold, but it was really 80-something% copper. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would cheat when they made it so they could make more of it. It's like cutting coke with baking soda or whatever. Like, they would do Baby that with gold. They would do that with gold when they made their when they made their gold coins and shit. That was another common, common technique. But
how quick before they learned the lesson on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times they just sort of got away with it, you know, for a long time. But it would cause economic crises when some ruler would do too much of that or whatever. There was the Great Debasement, which was actually Henry VIII did that. The Great Debasement was a currency debasement policy introduced in 1544 England under the order of Henry VIII, which saw the amount of precious metal and gold and silver coins reduced and in some cases replaced entirely with cheaper base metals such as copper.
He was a debasing motherfucker, that guy.
He was debased, overspending by Henry to pay for his lavish lifestyle and fund foreign wars are cited as reasons for this policy. The main aim of the policy was to increase revenue for the crown at the cost of taxpayers through savings and currency production, with less bullion being required to mint new ones. Gold standards dropped as a result of this, and the value of silver also reduced from 92.5% sterling to just 25%. It was revoked by Edward VI in 1551. Economic effects of it continued for many years until in 1560, they finally got all debased currency removed from circulation.
I'm about to sound stupid.
I'm probably not going to know the answer to the stupid question you're about to ask, so I'm going to be even stupider, so go ahead.
Okay. Is bullion another word for precious metals, or is bullion a completely separate thing? Because I've never looked into it. Whenever I hear bullion, you know, the first thing I think of is
chicken.
Chicken.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. People referring to precious metals as like bullioning or whatever, and I'm like, is that just another word for gold, or is it different?
It's like pure hitting gold or silver.
That's bullion.
It's gold. It's a precious metal that has been refined to a high standard of elemental purity. So it means that it's like, if it's gold bullion, it's hitting gold.
Okay. Right? Well, that makes chicken bullion make sense to me, because that's the process of that.
Yeah. That is the process of that. You're right.
It's 100% the process
it's
of that.
Like, it's you refined take stock it to its yeah. chickeniest form.
Yeah. It's concentrated hits.
Concentrated chicken hits.
Yeah.
Which is what they're doing with gold.
Wow. Yeah.
It's funny because it's like,
duh.
It makes sense that the word makes sense for that because like that's how words happen and work.
Yeah.
But that is still funny. You're right.
I'm glad we did this.
I am too. It was a great question.
Let's get off chicken bouillon because we could be here for 45 minutes.
Yes.
By the way, if you're out there and you own a chicken bouillon company, holler at us, puttingonairs@gmail.com. We'd love for you to advertise with us, and we'd be willing to give you a 1 month free trial in exchange for a ton of your products. All right. puttingonairs@gmail.com. Bouillon people.
Holler at us. The first paper money came about in where else? China in the 11th century. Because people started people that were hitting real hard, you know, you go to China, sell a shitload of spices. Now you got all these treasure chests full of loose coins that keep falling over your ship and stuff, right? Yeah. So they were like, this don't hit. This is like, it's heavy. You know what I mean?
It's a
huge pain in the ass to carry around, like the curse of hitting too hard.
But it hurts whores and got a titty bar.
Yeah, you got to carry all these heavy ass metal with you everywhere. And that was sort of the impetus for paper money. It was like, okay, well, we'll say that this is worth that many of that, and everybody agrees on it, and then you don't have to carry all that around, and that hit for people. Marco Polo wrote about it. There's a chapter in Marco Polo's book, a chapter titled "How the Great Khan Causeth the Bark of Trees Made into Something Akin to Paper to Pass for Money All Over His Country." So, you know,
ain't it wild that dude probably hit real hard, but you only know him for when you got your eyes closed in a swimming pool and you're looking for somebody else.
Yeah. Did you ever watch that Netflix show?
Uh-uh.
It was pretty good, I thought, but I think it was real, real expensive, and I don't think it was big enough of
about him.
Yeah, it's literally called Marco Polo. It's
dude. I never saw a trailer or anything. I saw a thing called Marco Polo. I swear to God, when I just saw the title, I thought it was like some horror film about people drowning in a pool.
Yeah,
I swear to God.
Really associate him with pool game, huh?
Yes.
No, I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, Benedict Wong, I think, plays the Great Khan in that show.
Nice.
The show did not hit. Like I haven't seen it in years. It was like it was in the early stages of Netflix emerging into, you know, primacy. Like it was after House of Cards, obviously, but it was before they became full blown what they are right now.
Right.
Like it came out around the same time that like Segura and Bill Burr and them were blowing up with specials on Netflix. Like when Netflix was
exploding
in popularity. Yeah, we've missed every hit train that's ever come through the fucking station. Right. No doubt about that. They did that. And then in other places, they started doing like bills of exchange, which is like you could, it was like you take a bunch of money to somebody and they give you a bill that says that like this is worth this amount or whatever, and then you can take that bill to a whole other city or whatever and present
like
it
a cashier's check.
Yeah, sort of, basically. Yes. But then the main reason people use those is because that, like, again, traveling with all that money was real dangerous. Those bandits and raiders and shit like that. If you got it all represented on a little note that, and also like I bet back then people were still like, you know,
what's that?
What is that? Like pointing at letters and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what alchemy is this? Speak to it, wizard. You know, like, are these your Stygian incantation? You know, like, but couldn't fucking read. I didn't know what was going on. So
Stygian incantations. Oh, that's great.
So anyway, yeah. So another thing they did as opposed to a bill of exchange, this almost came up earlier, was tally sticks, which I'd never heard of. You ever heard of tally sticks?
Fiddle,
I've heard of. So, yes, fiddle sticks, very famous type of stick. Tally sticks were like, a fucking stick, like a whole stick. And like the tax man would come to your place, right? And you owe this many taxes. Fucking 800 florins or whatever. And they would represent that with notches on the stick, right? Yeah. And then they would split the stick right down the middle, like directly down the middle.
He'd keep one.
He'd keep one and you keep one. And the one that meant you were owed money was called the stock, and the other one was called the foil, right?
Okay.
Taxman takes all these stocks back to the king or the lord or whatever, and all these, you know, he's got all these tally sticks that say all these people owe him this much money, right? He can trade those to other people if he wants. He's like, look, this is worth like 800 florins, right? Because this dude has to pay 800 florins for this stick. And the idea being that like eventually the dude pays the 800 florins in taxes, and then he gets the other half of the stick. And it was supposed to be fraud. It was like, you know, Dark Ages version of fraud proof, because only those two sticks would perfectly fit together. Like
Right.
So he would pay his taxes, get the stick, you know, verified. And then he got to keep the stick, and his debt was paid and he was free, whatever. But if you had the other stick, the stock, you know, you could say this worth 800 florins, but I'll sell it to you, Lord, you know, fuckhead, for 500.
Right. Cash.
Yeah. Right. And so they would do stuff like that. That became a very popular thing to do. So popular, in fact, that eventually they put a place together where guys would go just for this express purpose called the stock exchange.
Yeah.
They'd go there and exchange the stocks or whatever. So that's where that came from, too.
Dude, not that being the tax man isn't looked down upon by some people today. You know, like the IRS don't hit for people. You know, that's a thing. But being the tax man back then, I bet you about got your ass whipped a lot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like coming to those people, going, because having to go door to door, no, like a subtle little email to remind you some shit, maybe take the temperature of the room. Like you're just going to a dude who has five goats and a fucking dream and telling him that he owes this shit to some fucking king that he probably don't like. Like, I just bet that they went through tax man.
Yeah, you're probably right. So that's sort of how it went for most of forever. For a long time, though, from back then, from the onset of paper money until way more recently than I knew, paper money was always backed by something, typically gold, the gold right. standard. It was backed yep. by gold. So it was like this, we have this much paper money quantifiably, and that relates directly, or that represents directly the amount of gold that we have, you know, in our reserves or whatever, right? Like it's a one-to-one thing. And that's how it worked for most of history after paper money became a thing. When do you know when that stopped?
It was recently. Like it, I mean, and I, yes. I, when I say recently, I mean like 40s, 50s or something like that.
Even more recently. Richard Nixon in 1971 is when he changed that. And I did not realize that.
I did know it was Nixon. Recently. I was getting my years off.
But yeah, in 1971, the Nixon administration announced that the U.S. dollar would not be directly backed by or convertible to gold anymore. And ever since then,
been some shit.
It's the U.S. dollar and all national currencies are free floating currencies dominated by virtual credit rather than actual bullion. So, you know, right. like everything now is just numbers on a spreadsheet, like
yeah.
shit in the ether. You know what I mean? Like, and that's all relatively recent invention or idea. It used to be like, yeah, you'd have your little clay tablet with some notches on it, and that ain't by itself worth anything, but it somewhere meant that there was somewhere yeah. there was this much grain in a fucking silo that meant you owned, and grain had actual value and meant something. But now with fucking crypto and stocks and all this
nothing.
Fucking puts and calls and everything, and it's all just like financial Harry Potter shit,
dude.
It's just made up. Like it's weird. It's wild.
The reason that I knew that it was fairly recent, and like I said, the reason that I couldn't get there, but I knew it was Nixon, is because this was the first conspiracy theory type thing that I ever heard. And we're in fucking sixth grade, dude. My buddy, and he's still on that bullshit. I mean, but you don't start getting into conspiracy theories in fifth and sixth grade and then stop. You know, that's kind of a lifelong obsession. But I remember in sixth grade, I don't remember what we was in social studies or something talking about what the fuck ever. And he goes on this, like, looking back on it, especially for a sixth grader, very intelligent diatribe that he probably heard from his uncle. And he was parroting, but basically about how, like, you know, Nixon removed the Federal Reserve and made everything go off from the gold standard. And their reasoning for that was basically so that they could wipe money out of existence and make us all, you know, make it all obsolete so that we would be under their thumb and like we wouldn't be able to do anything. And like none of our shit would matter anywhere else and blah, 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 blah. Just going on and on about this shit. And I remember at the end, I was just like, do you want to play baseball? You know what yeah. I mean? Yeah. Like, but yeah. Anyways, that's the reason, like, that was the first, like, conspiracy shit that I heard. And, like, you know, right. It has been some shit.
Yeah, it's wild. So, anyway, that is my fucking middle school presentation on the history of money, the very high-level aspect. We didn't get any of the theories of money or any of that type of shit because, well, yeah, it goes way deeper and gets way more complicated.
Well, guess what? You can talk about it later.
Yeah. Maybe, okay. Probably never again, but yeah.
Now, I'm interested in this, so I'm definitely going to, like, prod you to bring it up. We're gonna take a break real quick to hear from our sponsors, and so that Daddy can use the bathroom, and we will be right back with a ghost from POA Past. This episode is brought to you by the Spring Cleaning Champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and the drapes, baby, with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out that winter bush with Manscaped's Lawn Mower 5.0. Oh, that's right. Not the 3, not the 4, the 5.0. And watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Embrace the season and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go to manscaped.com and use code POA20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Y'all, I've been on the Manscaped train. Now I can't even remember a time in my life when I didn't use Manscaped. I can tell you this, it was a very bad time in my life, mainly because I was always dropping my beard guards and stuff. But with my Manscaped beard trimmer, it's just got a little clicky thing. And that's great for people like me who have ADD and put things all over the place. But my favorite thing, I've been talking about it for a while, is the crop preserver and the ball toner. I be using both of them every day. I walk a lot, and sometimes I have to go directly from a walk into a situation where I'm around people. And guess what? My balls ain't got the stank on them if I use the crop preserver. They smell just like the day I was born, not like 5 minutes after they clean me off. You feel what I'm saying, Trey? You're on the Manscaped train, aren't you?
That's right. And after using Manscaped, I can say that I've caught the spring fever, Joe, and introducing the season's champ, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It also features dual LED spotlights to guide you through the darkest winter debris. Navigate with confidence in your most delicate areas. You hate making a mess? Not to worry. This bad boy is waterproof, so you can shave in the shower, in the bath, or in the ocean if you feel like it. We love this thing because it comes with a compact case. You can take it with you everywhere you go. Spring cleaning doesn't just apply to the nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Whether you're looking to craft your signature look or clean up that neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. So here's what you do. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code POA20. That's POA20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code POA20 at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pantaloons.
I know that's right, baby.
We back, Joe.
We ought to back. Mine sucked. Yours was good. You're so much better at Scottish.
That's all right. Fret not. You hit it. A lot of other things. You know,
like what?
Singing.
Okay.
Michael Caine, you know.
No, your Michael Caine's equal to mine.
I mean, only when I work on it. I can't go straight into it, which you can. But this, so.
By the way, we missed his birthday last week. We would like to say happy birthday to Michael Caine.
Didn't we have a whole plan to bring it up? We did. Just never happened.
We sure did, but we suck. But I would like to offer our happiest of birthdays to Michael Caine. And now that you are retired, you know that we have said that you have a standing invitation to come on the show. I think you got a little bit more time now. So happy birthday to Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. Okay, go into this because I'm excited about this because I do know what this is about, but I don't know any of the details and I'm looking forward to it because I was stunned to find out there even were details.
Me too.
Make sense in a second. So
go ahead.
America starts the day with America in the morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a
so
likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Refresh the putting on airs crowd about what we're talking about. I would like to play a clip that, I mean, this is from like episode 4 or 5 or something like that.
The stuff of legend.
Stuff of legend.
Too.
It's been around.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest. Have a look at the headlock here. This is the leg who got me on the penis, people. Oh,
it's a person. It's just
why did you do this?
It's a butt.
Oh, what? Wait, what is the card? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal? Oh, that's your right headlock, sir. Oh, I like this. I see that you know your zeros. And you, sir, are you waiting to receive my limp penis? Our gadget. Your hand.
Anyhow, it went better.
Oh, man. Ta-ta and farewell.
Absolute.
Democracy
manifest.
Yeah, that's so goddamn funny, dude. I mean, talked about it when we first showed it on like episode 4, like you said, but it's the stark contrast between that and like the times I've seen my mama or my Uncle Bubbles get arrested or whatever. it's a whole other level. And I thought, normally I'm good at picking out the difference, but the first time I saw that video, I thought that dude was some kind of Brit or something like that. Like, cause I don't think of Australians as being particularly more classy than
Agreed.
Us. This dude's Australian and he's really, you know, really, it's like the classiest arrest I've ever seen in my life. And it's so funny. But anyway, I never knew there was anything more to that guy or his story or anything at all beyond just that famous video. I never knew anything else.
Well, we're about to answer the question of why that was such a fancy arrest, but I would like to say, number one, that is one of the few videos I've ever seen where I think that if I started it over right now, no one would be mad.
Right.
Because it's like, dude, every time I watch it, it's like watching the fucking Departed. Every time I watch it, I go, no, that's my favorite part. You know what I mean?
Yes, there's so many... It's so wild that it's real and it's unscripted and off the cuff, and he's got so many good lines in it. Like, I see you know your judo well.
See, that's currently my favorite part.
It's so funny, man.
But before it was, this man is, are you ready to receive my limp penis?
Yes, sir. Right.
It's absolutely.
How dare you get your hand up?
Yeah. All right. So let's get into.
Of course, succulent Chinese meal. That's another great part of it.
So this guy. For years, nobody knew who this fucking guy was, like, at all.
Well, where did that come from? It didn't originate on the internet, obviously.
The video?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, it was a nightly news.
It's old, right?
Yeah.
A nightly news.
I think it was a nightly news thing that eventually... And again, a lot of the stuff that I'm about to tell you, it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. But the nightly news thing got out, and somebody was like, y'all got to see this shit. And I'm so fucking glad that some of that stuff remained, but... But here's the deal. So a bunch of people, when this started popping up again, like in the early days of the internet, somebody was like, I know who that fucking guy was. And they thought he was some he's this dude who was on the run for intimidating a Czechoslovakian prince or some shit like that. And they were like, that's that guy. They gave him by name. Well, turns out that wasn't that guy at all. And they were like, no, that's this other dude named Jack Carlson. But what's hilarious is once you get into who fucking the actual guy is, Jack Carlson, his actual story is not much different than the type of person who they thought it was. So here's a little bit on Jack Carlson. This whole situation took place October 1991. Carlson's eating at a Chinese restaurant with a buddy. This was his favorite Chinese restaurant, as you can tell.
Made that clear, yes. Is this in Australia?
It is. In Australia.
Because the cops had Australian accents, too.
In Australia. So here's the deal, though. He went there a lot, and his frequent trips had put him on the radar of this fraud detective who was working at American Express because apparently somebody had been using a stolen card at that restaurant in particular. And so... This fraud investigator is hanging out there a lot, and they basically ask a restaurant worker, like, hey, you know, who comes in here a lot? Who might this be? And they were like, it's that guy. This guy, he's in here a lot. He's a bit of a character, you know. And so this investigator, like, goes through none of the motions to, like, properly identify or, like, confirm any of this shit. He'd been on this case for a long time and he's just wanting it to wrap the fuck up. And he also wants the cops to get there as fast as they can because he wants this to be over with. So this motherfucker, he calls, their number is, I think, 001 or something. Our Australian fans will correct me on that, but it's 000 or something. They're 911. He calls them and he's like, hey, I got this guy. I need y'all to come arrest him. And he just, because he wanted it to hurry up, he reported him as he said, I've got one of Australia's most wanted criminals here.
Which was not true.
Which is why there were so many goddamn cops. Like, when you watch the video, you assume
the fucking, The Chow Mein Bandit.
Yeah, like you, like when you watch the video. Yeah, you watch the video and you're like, well, this wasn't a regular arrest because there's backup there, and but like this guy, the way he's talking doesn't match someone that would need backup. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it's because this fucking American Express fraud investigator was like, I got a tea time. You know what I mean? So he gets all the cops there. And
what's also interesting about that to me, just as an aside, Australia in 1991, they had American Express had a presence like that and investigators and stuff. Because remember, we went to the UK.
That's a great point.
Remember, we went to the UK. A whole lot of places wouldn't take America, you know, and we thought before we went over there, we're like, well, it is called American Express.
Yeah.
And a lot of places did take it, but a whole lot of places also did not take it. Like, it's not a preeminent option in the UK is what I'm saying. It's not a major credit card brand over there.
And to defend us a little bit, because like, yeah, it is called American Express, their marketing very much insinuates that it's like the global standard for like getting shit done. So I don't think,
and maybe that is the case. I mean, right, I'm not, I mean,
no,
right, I'm not wrong.
You're
right?
Not wrong.
We went over there in a lot of places.
We wanted to use it.
Right, wouldn't take it. Yeah.
Like that's my main dude. When I'm out and about, I always use it because in case some bullshit happens, they got you back. Whereas my horse bank don't.
33 years ago in Australia, you know,
that is crazy
that they had that kind of infrastructure and presence down there. But
no, you're right. That is a good fucking point. But here's the deal about this whole situation. Apparently, a couple of the arresting officers testify that when they arrested him in the restaurant, he was like calm as a cucumber, didn't put up a fuss at all, was just like not happy to get arrested, but just like they were like, sir, you need to come with us. You're under arrest. And he was just like, okay, no problem. Gets up. It was only until he gets outside, he sees all the media there. And this motherfucker just decided, I'm going to put on a show. Like, he literally was like, I'm just going to put on a show, because the cops even said that as soon as they got in the car and drove away, he stopped the shit immediately and just went, well, gentlemen, that was fun. And just like he just that did
makes
it.
That makes it hit harder for me, frankly.
Agreed. Agreed. And by the way, I also want to play. Here is an interview that I clipped up of him talking about the situation before I get into a little bit more of his mess. Give me 2 seconds.
Yeah, this is just a stroller, babe, that I call it sweet.
Enjoying a succulent meal with many glasses of the grape juice, of course, the red grape.
An American Express investigator followed a man he thought was one of Queensland's most wanted to a valley restaurant.
There was a suspicious-looking character a couple of tables away, looking at us, and every time I'd turn, he'd put his head down and pop a dim sum into his gob.
Minutes later, police had the business surrounded, then sent in a delegation.
The police fell on the place. Come running in, even one of them had a gun in his hand, and I said, what the devil's going on here? What do you want? Get up, you're under arrest. You're an international criminal. I said, I'm just a poor, struggling artist. How dare you? Get up. And they, you know, took me out, and I think there was all these TV cameras outside, and they, there it is. That's what you see on the internet now. You're supposed to be living in a democracy, and here they're dragging me out of a restaurant after enjoying halfway through a succulent Chinese meal. That's what I thought. Well, gentlemen, this is democracy manifest. Well, it was succulent, so I suppose it just flew into me head when they were trying to put handcuffs on me.
Man, that must have been one hell of a Chinese meal.
You know? Dude, like, I know.
Because he's like, succulent is the word for it.
I saw a bunch of comments on that video that I pulled where there were some people talking about how they lived in Australia at the time and knew the restaurant. And indeed, it was a banging Chinese restaurant.
When is that interview we just watched from?
That's like a good question. I think that's like 2000. I know it's like the 2010s era. I don't know how.
Okay. So you, 10-ish or so years
probably,
ago.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. So anyway, and in there, by the way, it says that the investigator recognized him as one of Australia's most wanted criminals. But that is in the report that I read. It said that that was not the case. And he said that without knowing shit, just to hurry the thing along. But what is here's the deal. So while the investigator was lying when he said that he was one of Australia's most wanted criminals, he wasn't wrong about the fact that he had indeed been a criminal. And not only that, but he was a serial prison escapee.
Nice.
Yeah. So his first escape.
Well, I guess it depends on what he's there for in the first place. Which, yeah.
Well, it's fine. So 1966 is his first escape. He was on a train going from Boggo Road, Gaol. He was facing a breaking and entering charge, which, like, I mean, I'm not saying you should break and enter, but, you know, he didn't kill nobody.
Yeah.
And he just straight up, he was on a train.
Drove off of it.
He got out of his handcuffs and then jumped off the train. Yeah. So
it'll do it.
2 years later, he had been locked up in McLeod Prison for another theft. He convinced he was on an island. It was Victorious French Island, which is where the jail was. And he just convinced a local fisherman to give him a ride to the mainland. Like, I guess while he was out there on volunteer detail, he was like,
take me to, you know, whatever.
I mean, he is a charismatic sumbitch, you know,
for sure.
I mean?
3 months after that, he had stole a car, and he was driving around in the stolen car, and he had a bunch of safe-breaking tools. He was in Parramatta, and just before his trial, he successfully impersonated a detective and walked out of his court cell, right?
What the fuck, dude?
And
it's like Australian Frank Abagnale or something.
I know, dude, I know. And so after that, he was eventually captured and he was sentenced to 8 years in Parramatta Gaol prison or whatever. And he was put in this big cell and with this guy named Jim McNeil, who would end up becoming a really good buddy of his. So McNeil had actually heard about this guy. This guy was like Australian criminal lore because he'd been escaping prisons and he was just like, I don't know, he was like a fucking Robin Hood of prisoners, you know, like he was just like a legend. And so it really hit for him that he impersonated a detective. We thought it was hilarious. So, like, they immediately bond, become buddies. They start making Pruno in the sink from raisins and shit. And they obviously had a lot in common, both being criminals, but they both had also grew up very poor. And they had both also been abused. And this is a bummer, but physically and sexually by adults in their life.
Where did this guy get the, like, the affectation that he has? Because he don't seem like a poor trash kid who
we're getting there.
Oh, okay, so there's an actual answer to that
there
question. He seems fancy. He seems like a fancy motherfucker.
Couldn't agree with you more.
I need to figure that out. I need to learn from this man.
So they.
Jesus Christ.
Shut up. Sorry.
My baby crying at the end of that.
No, that was Chewbacca.
Oh,
my ringtone.
Okay.
Oh, fuck. Where was I? His buddy McNeil, right? So they just get on really good. They, you know, they have a shared history together, or they have a shared, you know, type of childhood. And McNeil was like, he always wanted to write. He always thought that'd be something he'd be good at. And Carlson, our man here, he like encouraged him. He's like, dude, we're in here. We ain't got shit else to do. So like, why don't you do it? So McNeil wrote a play about two cellmates who brewed like Pruno and shit together.
Yeah,
and they
got what you know.
Yeah. And they put it on together with Carlson playing the leading role. And it's at that moment that they both
like in prison.
Yeah. They put on prison plays. Yeah, they put on prison plays. And so McNeil discovers like, oh, shit, I can write. So he gets a typewriter smuggled in. And Carlson realizes like, hey, I'm pretty good at acting. So like he kept acting and the plays actually became a pretty big hit, like not just in the prisons, but like amongst intellectuals from Australia. And like a lot of these people who were campaigning for prisoners' rights would come through. They would see this and they're like, dude, this is actually like fucking good shit. And so within 4 years of this, like them writing all these plays convinced the parole board with a bunch of people coming in, you know, talking about how like these guys are actually really talented. They'd be better off in the real world. They both got released from their prison sentence 13 years early. So they continue to be buddies and like writing partners and working on plays and shit together. They got a house.
It's kind of funny that like, I mean, that does hit for me. I dig that, but it's also like, it's kind of funny that, you know, it wasn't like good behavior or anything like that. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, it was just like, no, he's a good writer. He hits. It's like, yeah. So I was like, what about me? Can I get out too? You know?
Yeah.
And he's, it was like, nope. Or yeah, can you write shit? It's like, no, not really.
Right.
But I follow all the rules and I'm a nice guy, you know. Mm-hmm. Get back in the fucking cell, you.
Right. Yeah. And it's all these intellectuals from these groups that are like protesting for prisoners' rights. And like, that was, you know, they were the ones that stuck their necks out for him. It's like, but these guys, see, you don't understand. These are valuable people.
Right. Yes,
they
exactly.
They make plays.
Yes, sentient trash bags.
Yeah.
Like the rest of these fucking bogans you got in here. You can, yeah, you can throw them under the prison probably there.
Yeah.
But these guys can, yeah, write snappy dialogue.
Right.
So think you need to get them out of here.
So they move into a house in Richmond, Australia, and they decide like, well, we're going to be artists and we're going to be intellectuals. But, you know, as you can imagine, like they didn't quite fit in because they were fucking actual criminals. None of them had ever been in like an actual theater before. But they get out of prison and McNeil like discovers that like his plays, not only were they appreciated by these Australian intellectuals, but they had entered the fucking zeitgeist, and like across Australia, people were not even knowing these dudes' stories, performing his plays. And so he's like, okay, well, like, I'm good, man. Like, I won't ever have to steal. I won't ever have to, you know, do any shit like that. So he just keeps writing plays. He does a lot of radio and a lot of press, and he, quote, would give didactic rants about the brutality of the justice system, which I would love to fucking hear, but I couldn't find any of them. Carlson, meanwhile, our fucking succulent Chinese dude, he continues acting, and he actually got parts in some primetime dramas like Homicide and Matlock.
American primetime drama? Or like the Australian version of
You know what? Shows. I should have looked that up, but I just saw Matlock, and I just assumed it was the... But yeah, it was probably some Australian shit. But like, that is why it's a performance. That's why he doesn't... You know what I mean? Like, he is being Shakespearean. And I think that he has, now that he's out and he's not a poor kid anymore, I think maybe he has decided, I'm theatrical and this is how I fucking talk. And it's sort of like a new identity for him. But basically, my point is, when you go back and look at that whole succulent Chinese meal thing, now you go, that is an actor. Like, that is a guy who is commanding. And like he said, he even gets in the car and goes, that was fun. Like, I think he saw the whole world as a stage. Now, unfortunately, his buddy McNeil died in 1982 from alcohol. 1982?
1982,
yeah.
Oh, so... and that clip is from 91, isn't it?
Yeah, he'd been acting for a long time.
Hold on, wait a minute. Wait, so, okay, so in 91 when he got arrested, that was all mistaken? He wasn't doing crime at that point?
That's what I'm saying, like,
okay.
That's what I'm saying is, like, the fucking, from what I read, he just was in this restaurant. The goddamn American Express fraud case thing was working. This guy just goes, this guy's one of the most wanted criminals in Australia, trying to hurry this shit up along. Again, he wasn't one of the most wanted criminals in Australia. However, he had been kind of at one point, but no, he was acting this whole time. And so, but his buddy McNeil, he dies of alcoholism in 82. And for legal reasons, Carlson couldn't travel to the funeral. And he says, this is a quote from him, I, with a bodgy, which means a fake ID in Australian, booked up hundreds and hundreds of
Australian.
Yeah. I, with a bodgy, booked up hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of flowers and wreaths and sent it to him. So he did fraud. He did some fraud to send flowers and shit to. You know what? It probably was him at the Chinese restaurant, regardless. Anyways, they were talking about, you know, his plays, which were all his plays that they that he acted in and they wrote were all screeds aimed at a society that arrested and tormented unfortunate men for petty crimes. Like one of them, he told a story about an Aboriginal cellmate and he was quoted as saying he was illiterate. He was poor. He had nothing. And he stole threepence a penny and then he got 3.5 years. That's a penny a year. Their whole notion on their writing their plays was prison is the best way to show what's wrong with the outside. But fucking point is this guy who for goddamn years is and still is most famous from this clip lived, like you said, like a fucking Frank Abagnale life. And I ain't never heard none of that shit.
I never heard none of it either. I mean, I remember like it came up in the group chat recently somehow or another, Mark, of course, it's always Mark. Always smart Mark. Yeah, but I didn't read into it because I think I knew you were going to talk about it. So, yeah, but it's wild. I never knew there was any more to that story at all other than just, you know, it's like finding out that the laughing Chewbacca mask lady was like a vaunted opera singer who had a dalliance with an MI5 agent in the 70s or something like that during the Cold War.
Thinking about that lady, man, like it's so wild how things like that have like, you know, the whole like in the future, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. But like how fucking insanely popular that particular thing was. And I'm pretty sure that lady, I know that her 15 minutes are over, but like the way she was able to capitalize on that is like Cameo had just come out. And she was doing a fucking ton of cameos as that Chewbacca thing. So, like, I know that it you can't make a sustainable career on being the Chewbacca face lady. But right. I do think that she, you know, ended up making that hit for a second.
Yeah, I've always been pretty glad that the thing that I went viral for is, like,
sustainable,
very adjacent to, what'd you say?
Sustainable and adjacent to your career.
Yeah, like the thing I wanted to do, you know. I mean,
right.
I wanted to be a comedian, and so I make these like comedic rant videos or whatever. It's, you know, aligned because the dude that went viral from like skateboarding down an off ramp, drinking cranberry juice,
listening to
Dreams play.
Yeah,
was that it?
Yeah, Dreams.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
That guy, you know, like shit like that happens every now and then. These people become like huge for stuff like that. And it's always like, I know in their position, you've got to be like, oh, this is wild. And I mean, I know because I've been in their position. And so right. you, it is wild and insane, but it's all, but like, how do I, what take I do with this?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And, but if it's one of those type things, what the fuck do you do?
I mean, that guy,
Cameo.
That guy in particular, actually, I know only a little bit about him. He, before that video went viral, he was kind of fairly popular on TikTok for making similar videos.
Yeah.
It's just that one went mega crazy. And I think after that, he did have like 2 million or something followers on TikTok, which, again, you can turn that into monetary gains, but you have to keep putting out hits, you know, and like, right. you know, but for those people that weren't looking to make entertainment their career, it's like, hey, at least you got a nice little bag there for something stupid. And then hopefully either invested it or, you know, had a fucking good time with it. But like, but yeah, man, it's because like that Chewbacca lady, what's crazy is like going viral for something that you weren't even the talent in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it was a complete accident. Like she was just laughing and had on a Chewbacca mask.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. She was just looking at herself in a Chewbacca mask. Right. And then she started cracking up. And she was a funny laugher.
Right.
It looked funny because the Chewbacca mask was laughing this like
right.
suburban mom's laugh. And that was the whole thing. Yeah.
Because like, because of how the algorithm and stuff works, it's possible you may never have a video hit quite as hard as that porch rant that went mega viral, but you can.
Possible. I'd say it's likely.
Do what? Yeah. Right.
I don't.
But my point is, though, is that you can still recreate what that was, and it continues to hit for people. You can't recreate an accident that happened. Right. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that's the Democracy Manifest guy, which I think is great. You want to do some email, Trey?
I think so, yeah.
Now, you're going to love this one. This is so. I almost accidentally sent this to the group, but I'm glad I didn't. Subject line, Oscars/Forrest Gump. Okay. I've always loved the film Forrest Gump. However, my mother did not. Finally, about 10 years ago, I asked her what her qualms were about the movie. She told me she hated the way they were portraying a Southern person as stupid and uneducated. I was surprised and began to explain that this movie was about a man from Alabama that was low-grade mentally handicapped or slightly autistic. Despite his various obstacles, he lives a very fulfilled life and has an interesting tale. My mother's light bulb went off, and I saw her realization that she had misunderstood this picture for 15 years. Now she likes it. I'm a big fan of the Skewniverse. Seen y'all live several times. I'm from Birmingham. Shake it easy.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is my bit, but that lady is presumably from Alabama. So I have there's a bit in my special that's on YouTube. I think that joke's in the special. I'm pretty sure it is. I was definitely doing it on stage in the run-up to filming the special, so I think it's in there. But there's a bit in my special about Californians not knowing anything about the South or the rural South or Southerners, you know, like not getting, you know, it's like how did you get out? How did you make it out? That type of shit. And I talk about it a little bit, and then I say, it's like, I bet you in 1994, there were a fair number of people out here who genuinely did not realize Forrest Gump was mentally handicapped, you know, because they just couldn't tell the difference. Like they were talking about it at work the next day, like, oh, it's this amazing film about a completely typical Alabama man. So the idea that like people didn't recognize that Forrest was R-worded because they just thought he was from Alabama. It's always been very funny to me, and it's particularly funny to hear that really happened, and it was an Alabama woman who made this. I guess I kind of get from her perspective, it's sort of like, this is why Hollywood thinks Alabama people are, and that's why she's mad about it.
Right.
So I guess it kind of tracks, but yeah, that's very funny.
Super funny. Subject line, squirrel rape. / Trey is coming to Gainesville! !x4 This is from Justin, who says, you can say my name if you want. So I did. Hey, I've been meaning to mention this since the live stream of POA. Trey had mentioned that squirrels are notorious rapists and inferred that that meant they don't love. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating. I'm not advocating rape or anything like that. But does he think that rapists don't love? Surely some of them at least love someone. At the very least, they all have parents. On a brighter note, I was at a concert the other night and saw that Trey is coming to the High Dive here in Gainesville, Florida on June 8th. TreyCrowder.com for tickets. I'm just curious if he'll be doing a meet and greet. If so, would it be before or after the show? Anyways, love y'all.
Wild take, in my opinion, an email.
It's a very wild
about
take.
The very what to be like, listen, just so y'all know, rapists can love too.
It's true, but it's
I'm
a
not,
wild
yeah, but thing. I don't want to be the guy hollering that into the microphone.
No.
But anyway, but you know, good on you, Justin, for sticking up for rapists. You're not doing, I'm kidding. I'll go out after it will be after the show. I've never been to this place, so I don't know how it's set up, but whatever is in like the front area, the bar or whatever's out there.
Yeah.
I will walk out there after the show is over and talk to people and take pictures and stuff. So yeah, I'll see you there.
Subject line right here, Cho, an L word for dick, courtesy of Mojo Nixon. Rest in peace.
God.
Yeah. What?
Just the L word for dick. I'm glad. I'm relieved to get one.
Yeah, me too. Greetings, fellas. I'm going to have to cite my man Mojo Nixon and go with Love Pork Chop from the famous song Louisiana Lip Lock. Lord, he had some bangers. Slip that one into regular polite conversation for a rocking good time. Also,
hell, like love sausage is,
yep.
You know what I mean? That was right there, you know.
We're idiots.
Yeah.
You'd think that'd be the thing we were the best at.
I know.
We were the worst at.
I'm embarrassed. Yeah.
Also, You Can't Hide a Papaw is a t-shirt begging to be made. I don't remember when we said that.
It was, talking about Robert De Niro and the Irishman.
That's right.
Yeah. Them trying to hide the fact he was a papaw, but you can't hide a papaw. Yeah.
That is a good shirt. We got to get on that shit.
I know.
Congrats on going over 100 episodes. Feels like just yesterday I was deeply torn in the great squirrel debates. Keep up the good work, boys. Always look forward to new episodes. P.S. I'm saving this. I had to say this. P.S. Forever ago, I think it was Cho that called out Trey's resting disgruntled face. Somebody please go open up Trey's Instagram video page and tell me that isn't a catalog of the finest disgruntled faces in the plant.
In the plant?
I don't know.
Planet?
On the planet. Yeah, I guess it was.
Shit. If you're talking about like the thumbnail of my reels that I put out, if that's what you mean by on my Instagram page, I'll take disgruntled over the dumbest motherfucker on earth any day, because sometimes that's how I look. And
that's true.
It's funny because like you can pick those yourself,
right? Yeah.
And I just don't, because like you have to wait till it like uploads fully before you can pick the thumbnail, and I just skip on past that. I'm like, I'll take whatever they give me.
I can off mic, I can show you a better way to do it, because I had to start. I have to do it now, because if I don't, I look equally, if not worse than you. Worse than you, because I'm way fatter. And also, I am, unlike you, I'm very this when I do videos. And oftentimes, it's like
that. I've got one of those saved in my favorites. Yeah.
Okay, last one here. I've got a couple more, but we're running out of time. I'll get to them next week. Last one here. Subject line, Northwest Georgia / South Tennessee from North Florida's point of view. My name is Ben Lavelle. Feel free to use it. No one I know but me listens or even knows who you are. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate
you.
Let me start by saying y'all don't help very much. Let's get that out of the way. I bring you up all the time, and literally no one has ever heard. He has any idea who you are or what you do, and I just want to make sure that y'all were aware of that before I proceed with my message.
He continues, if someone I know secretly is a fan, this is their chance to ask me about it. My family and I recently camped in Cloudland Canyon State Park for a few nights. By the way, that is right there. I'm pointing direct near it. I mean, it's a 35-minute drive up a mountain, but like still, like we used to go there all the time. For a few nights, followed by a few nights in a hotel in Chattanooga. This was our first time in Northwest Georgia instead of New England, or instead of Northeast, and we made a few observations. Number one, not as many rebel flags or gun-related imagery as I expected. In fact, not even close to what I normally see at home in Florida. I have a theory. Florida was always a purple state, normally hard to predict, but we've gotten pretty red lately, and for the first time in a long time, we feel like we fit in with all our neighbors. You ever have that new guy move to town from the Midwest, and within a year or two, he has a big fire pit, a four-wheeler, and kind of doubles down on everything redneck? God damn it, yes, I do. I've known two people that I know of. I'm sure I know more people that have a rebel flag tattoo, but the two that I've seen it, both, one was from California and the other one was from somewhere else up north, and they moved here and it's like they wanted to assimilate. And I was right. Like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's us right now. It's wild, y'all. Obviously, I'm sure you're aware of our reputation, but lately it's been wild. Two, that stare. If you're fucking up in Northwest Georgia or South Tennessee, they're going to let you know with that stare. One night of the trip, I went solo backpacking, so my wife and kids ate at a local restaurant for dinner. They pulled up to a building that turned out not to be the restaurant. A woman pokes her head out of the door and stares my wife down until she drives off. The next morning for breakfast, she had a similar incident at a different cafe. She told me about it, and I assumed she was exaggerating until it happened to me in Chattanooga with a waitress who thought I was stiffing her on a tip. That stare has a way of making you see your dumbass through their eyes and can be both enlightening and humbling. Number three, however, it is beautiful. A lovely part of the country. Can't wait to go back. Corey, you are so lucky to live in such a beautiful region, as I'm sure you are aware.
Yes, I am very aware. Big longtime fan. Saw all three of you in Orlando years ago. Just saw Trey in Ybor City. By the way, your book hits, your shows hit. The two shows that I've seen y'all in were the best shows I have ever been to. Your first book made me cry, and your second one is making me laugh real hard. Thanks for doing what you do.
I got hits. Thank you.
I don't know the stare that he's talking about.
I don't either. I was going to ask you that because, you know, you live there. I didn't know if that was like a known thing, but.
No, I mean,
people got the stank eye and the side eye and stuff, but I feel like you run into that anywhere.
The only theory that I have on it now is that they were aware that you weren't from here.
I wonder if this dude and his old lady, the Florida with him, if they're like different in some way, or they're wearing something that outs them as different. Because like, in that case, I do get it. Because I'm not saying it's right.
But
no, I was just in, yeah, I don't mean I get it as in like, yeah, you had it coming, dumbass. Stay in Florida. That's not what I meant.
Right.
I was just in Cookeville, you know, not long ago with my family, and I am from there, but I had on this hat, which just happens to be sitting right beside me. It says, Virginia is for lovers, and it's
got the queer heart.
You got the queer heart on it, right? And I was wearing this at a Waffle House in Cookeville, and I got a lot of stares. And yeah. I'm in there with my wife and children and everything, which I'm sure probably pissed them off more.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine. You know what I mean?
Look what he's doing to them boys.
Exactly. It's like, he ain't even gay, and he's being gay, turning them boys gay and everything. And, you know, one of my sons has long hair, and the other one's, like, talking out loud about being a vegetarian and stuff. So, anyway. So, yeah, it's probably that. They probably outed. They probably clocked you as being some kind of outsider.
Yeah.
And that's why you're getting, that would be my theory.
Me too. Because otherwise, I mean, you know, I've always said this, like, I'm not saying that they don't support maybe some bad things, but dude, people around here are great. You know what I mean? Like some of the nicest goddamn, you know, depending on, you know, whatever. But anyways, yes, you are correct. I am very lucky to live here. I love it so much. But Trey, tell everybody where you're going to be. I know that you're on a little break, but then you're going to Canada. Is that correct?
Yeah, Vancouver for one night only, and then Seattle the night after that. And then next up after that is Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and then a whole bunch of other places. Go to TreyCrowder.com and come and see me.
Listen to all the other podcasts in the Skewniverse. We've got Well Read. This week was a very great episode with our friend, comedian Daniel Van Kirk, and also Gravy Baby. And check me out at BonusCorey.com. I just threw up my first park rant in a while because my leg is healed, so you can enjoy that in audio or video form. BonusCorey.com. And remember, stay fancy, motherfuckers.
Skew.
Here's Lydia Loveless.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cut, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.
Whoa, whoa, airheads, don't go anywhere. First off, I hope you really enjoyed that riveting discussion on money from Trey. And of course, I brought you the, I think, unknown tale of the very famous democracy manifest feller from Australia. But as you can see, I have Lady Kirby with me. A lot of people A lot of people have been asking me, and I think this is really funny, Kirby. A lot of people have been saying, hey, when are we going to get more Little House of the Dragon? And I was like, well,
yeah, we gotta have more show.
House of the Dragon kind of has to come back on.
Yeah.
But, and I didn't know this, Little House of the Dragon is about to come back on in
June.
Yeah, and you informed me yesterday that the trailer was dropping today.
Today.
Which is Thursday this is the past. This episode, obviously, is releasing on Friday. So we thought, hey, guess what? We're going to do a little first reaction of the trailer, two trailers.
Yes, four trailers.
For the airheads, so that y'all can go ahead and get ready, because, yes, we're going to be doing a Little House of the Dragon Season 2. And we're both so pumped.
Yes.
What'd you think of the trailers?
Okay, I thought they were badass.
Mm-hmm. Can we curse on the show now?
I thought that I did last time.
Okay, I'm for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, no nasty.
Okay.
No nasty.
Okay.
But
I mean, I just think that all curse words are the same. But
I know, but like if Laura James says badass, it's a lot different than saying,
yeah,
see you next Tuesday.
Okay, I hear you. Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So, okay, two trailers, both were badass. Even though I'm a Team Black girly, I feel like the green trailer kind of hit harder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I guess as a mom, I feel for Alicent. Like, I think, like, I know why she want. First of all, I also get, if you remember last season, they think that Viserys was saying that Aegon was the prince that was promised.
Right.
Was that it, the prince that was promised?
I think that was the phrase.
Or
yeah.
Is that Game of Thrones?
Look, same.
Same universe.
And I got to tell you, you're doing really good here because mm-hmm. I'm not going to front. I'm going to have to go back and refresh. For sure.
Yeah.
Just because, like, look, man. And this is
Jon Snow was the prince that was promised.
Okay, but again, I don't think that's on you. And this is a testament to just how great the show is mm-hmm. and the world. Like, it's not that it's confusing. It's just that
there's
so much. Like, so anyways, go on. You're doing great.
Well, remember Viserys like said something on his deathbed, but he was really thinking he was talking to Rhaenyra.
Exactly.
But he was actually, I guess, Aegon and maybe Alicent, just Alicent was in the room.
Right.
And so she took that as, hey, you want Aegon to be on the throne.
Yes.
And so, I mean, which I get, like, you know, I mean, this isn't like New Days where it's just like, oh, it doesn't matter who the firstborn is. Like, yeah, the firstborn boy.
Right.
You know, like, that's normal to think. And also, I'm sure she thinks, hey, if I don't get him on the throne, then Rhaenyra's going to kill my whole family.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah, and because I keep wanting to say, because back then,
yeah.
We did that so much. But
it's based on medieval times.
It would be bloodshed.
Yeah.
Like, back then, it's like, hey, if we're not the ruling mm-hmm. people and mm-hmm. there is a claim to mm-hmm. the throne, mm-hmm. then, like, our people are going to die. And you said earlier, like, you kind of understand her. Now, since the last time we watched this show, mm-hmm. I have now become a parent.
Yes.
And, like, I can look at, like, what is objectively right, but then I go, if I put myself in that position, yeah. I'm like, yeah, but I would ride or die for my kids. Mm-hmm. So, like, I do understand
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm still Team Black, but it's like, okay, but if I'm you, I totally get it.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Were there, which I feel like we probably need to watch it 20 more times to analyze it. But obviously, in I can't remember if it's Green or Black, there is a funeral.
Yes.
Saw Alicent and someone else beside her. They're wearing black veils. Someone dies.
Yeah, and I don't know who that is.
And it's obviously someone close to Alicent.
Right.
You know, where they would have shown like Rhaenyra, which I was hoping we'd see like a little bit of a rage moment with Rhaenyra about. Was it Lucerys that died?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah, yes, it was Lucerys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's Jace and Luke. I can't remember which one died. But I guess maybe we got that at the very end of the last season when she had that moment where she like looked at the camera, which, holy moly, was an intense moment.
By the way, Jace and Luke, if you'd have asked me what show are the characters Jace and Luke on, I'd have been like, Yellowstone.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, because they're Lucerys and Jacara,
yeah.
For real. There's going to be some good stuff.
I know. I'm very excited about it. And like I said, I think we definitely need to do a rewatch. And speaking of that, I know that there's a lot of people who have just joined the Putting On Airs Skewniverse, as we like to call it. And you might not even know what we're talking about right now. We did a season one watch-along of House of the Dragon. We call it Little House of the Dragon. And if you want to rewatch along with us, you can get every episode from season one. It's in the archives of the Putting On Airs podcast, both in audio form, just right there on your podcast player, or it's on our YouTube. At watchpoa.com, me and Lady Kirby. I don't know if we played. Did we play dress up every episode?
No, not every.
Yeah, we got lazy sometimes.
Yeah, we did.
This time we're playing dress up every time.
That's fine with me. I love cosplay.
Because, you know, like, here's the deal. When a show gets a season two, the budget increases. Mm-hmm. Our budget's about the same. I'm not gonna lie, but
oh, really?
No, our budget's about the same. But I think you still have to increase the production value in a way, which means we're gonna have more segments. Mm-hmm. We're gonna dress up every time, and also, as always, on Putting On Airs, we do love taking audience suggestions. Stuff you loved last time that you want us to hang on to, mm-hmm. new things that you would like us to do, you can send those emails at puttingonairs@gmail.com. And we got to get you, I'll have to get you the password to that so that you can do my job for me.
Yeah, and you'll have to teach me how to tweet.
Oh, and Reddit. Everybody, I need to promote that more. We're on Reddit. Are putting on airs. I need to teach you how to tweet and how to do Reddit. Yeah,
teach me how to Dougie, too.
Yeah, rest in peace. I'm very excited. So pumped for all of y'all to join us on this. So, Little House of the Dragon Season 2 coming at you soon. I guess, when's the show premiering?
I think it was June 16th.
Okay, so whatever the following, what was it? What did we do them on, Mondays? We'll tell you later.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, holler at your girl.
Yeah, all right. Well, we love y'all. Thanks for listening to Putting On Airs. Like, subscribe, download. Tell all your friends, and we will see you next time.
Peace.
I've never done that, but doing it now. Mwah. Okay.
Bye-bye. Remember when we did the... we did...
Prince Ali, Ali is he, Ali Ababwa. Sitting butts, looking on dirt, being a buddy. I can't remember the rest of it, but it's pretty good.